Accession number 17747, reel 21.
Talking about the time at the end of November 1943, when we and the Germans seemed to have come to a standstill in the Hitler's so-called winter line in the mountains south of Cassino, and we were facing across a valley Monte Camino, which also had a monastery on top of it, and the thought of attacking that mountain was horrendous. Just to look at it was frightening for the infantry. A point that I hadn't put into my diaries, but I remember very clearly at this time, in this particular week or two, was the fact that from 167 Brigade, a volunteer South African captain had offered himself to the brigade commander as a volunteer to go out dressed as an Italian peasant to carry out a reconnaissance of Monte Camino and the monastery. And he spoke Italian very well. And the brigadier accepted this and was obviously much moved by the offer, as everybody was, because we knew and he knew that if he were found, he'd simply be executed on the spot. So it was an act of enormous courage. I never heard what became of it, but presumably we would have heard had he been executed. 1st of December went off to reorganize the tactical headquarters in tremendous hurry and then go in a jeep with TAC-HQ towards the enemy, settle and dig in near a village called San Clemente and have a bit of a row with the commanding officer on familiar lines as he was getting agitated about the start of the battle.
Had you been doing any shooting while you were in this
district? No, we hadn't, no.
You just had your guns laid out?
The guns were...
DF set, but no shooting?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Presumably this gave you a chance to a bit of maintenance and repair.
Yes, exactly. The period would have been used cleaning the guns, making sure that things were in order, having the instruments reset and adjusted as necessary. Mm-hmm. And 2nd of December, with a huge rucksack and a stick, march off in sunshine to the foot of Monte Camino. And on the way, we passed one or two infantrymen, and we realized that after a time that we were in no man's land. We, in fact, were in front of the infantry, our little tactical headquarters.
Who was doing the map reading?
Oh, we knew where we were, but we
knew where you were.
Oh, yes, we knew where we were, but we thought the infantry were in front of us, you see. We found out that they, in fact, were not. They had been, but they had been to have a look and come back, and we were stuck out. And it was that day, the 2nd of December, was the only time I am conscious of having been personally targeted by a sniper. I was standing looking at the maps and talking to a driver and one or two others in bright sunshine, and there was a terrific ping as the bullet hit the wall just at the side of my shoulder. So we didn't waste any time in going across the road and into a cottage that was there. And of course they knew where we were, and within no time at all mortar shells were landing at the side of this cottage.
This was in a... This was on the...
It was in a hamlet. It was on the slopes just beginning to go up this tremendous Monte Camino. Mm. Later on, the biggest artillery concentration in history begins. And the fusilier...
Did you manage to get out of this cottage?
And, no, we didn't get out. We stayed there. It made it our... It was our TAC-HQ.
Ah. But you'd been spotted, hadn't you?
Yes, we'd been spotted, but we couldn't get anywhere. There was nowhere else to go.
You couldn't get out?
No, there was no hope of getting out without being killed.
Mm.
We were all right. It was a fairly well-built cottage. And
you had communications.
We had communications. We had the radio.
Could you see? What could you?
All we could see was up a damn great hillside, with the monastery at the top.
But I mean, so you, it was you and the commanding officer.
The CO had not arrived at that time. He was.
He hadn't.
He was somewhere with the. He was somewhere with the infantry brigadier, still further up. He was beyond us. We were establishing this little base for him, and he was out in a jeep with the infantry commander, talking about the form of the battle.
Yes. So he was on his own recce.
Yes, he was on his own recce at that time with his driver.
And you had simply wrecked.
We were establishing a forward base for him, attack HQ. That's right. Sorry, I expressed it rather badly. It was all slightly disorderly. And I noted that the biggest artillery concentration in history then begins, and the fusiliers go in, coming back past our attack HQ.
Yes.
I can see it now, a little cottage at the side of a country lane, and we had been on our own. Seen one or two of our own infantry going back, and then up they came, marching in battle order.
Now, who was in your party then, in the TAC HQ? It would be yours, you with the...
Me and a couple of signallers and a driver, that's about it.
And you were waiting for the CO to come back
and
join
you? Exactly.
Right.
Precisely so. Precisely so. He did come back to us. He came back for that evening, and we heard that the brigade were doing well. Targets 727 and 819 captured. Now, those must have been just locations rather than anything significant.
Were they named after their spot heights, do you know, or was there some...
Oh, that's a point. I hadn't thought of that.
Naming them, because...
Yes, you're probably right. That's a good point. It would figure also in terms of metres.
Yes.
800, 300 bits. Yes, I think you're probably right.
So they were... The fusiliers came up. What... You say they were in battle order. What formation were they in when you saw them coming up?
Well, they were marching up in... at that time, before breaking up into single file. They were just marching in... Quite a quick march in threes. That was the normal thing. But of course, marching's hardly the word. They'd be slightly less formal than that. It wasn't a left-right sort of job.
Were they under fire as they were moving up?
No, not at this time, because apart from anything else, it would be dark.
Ah, so this advance occurred after dusk.
Yes.
Yes.
It'd be dark, you see, by 4 o'clock or so.
But when you obviously, when you've been sniped,
this was about lunchtime.
Broad daylight. Yes.
Oh yes, it was about lunchtime.
Mm.
And the brigadier, the colonel, spent the morning with us, and indeed the afternoon. Then he went up. I've reported that prisoners are bomb happy from the shelling. Now, I don't know whether those were... Yes, they were Germans, that's right. They're Germans being brought down by the fusiliers in a pretty shaken state. And then the CO goes up the mountain to infantry headquarters, and there is relative peace in TAC HQ. We are in a stable, this building I mentioned before, but with loud mortar shells landing all round. The 4th of December, tragic day, there are a few infantry setbacks. Then I intercept a message and find that a mortar hit the colonel's tactical party, and that the CO himself and men called Timmins, Clark and Ruddy are all in an ADS, ambulance dressing station?
Advanced dressing station.
Advanced dressing station. Mm. Also, the 201 Guards Brigade headquarters has been hit. So there's a frantic reorganization, and I arranged to get a new tactical headquarters up the hill with the CO2, Major Churchill, in charge. Heaps of prisoners come down back down the lane, and also casualties. And the mule track, which it really is wicked to negotiate. Sunday the 5th of December, the monastery is taken, then retaken by the Germans. Ding-dong battle. Huge pieces of mortar shell land near my, quotes, house, quotes off. Peasants are evacuated by the troops, told to get out. A brigade patrol officer, I don't know what he would be. I can't think, he's probably a captain or something.
Probably a captain,
he's missing, and heaps of others are too. Communications are terribly difficult. Monday the 6th, hear that Ruddy is dead. I have a draft in there in pencil of the letter I had to write to his parents. And that the CO and Timmins have eye and face wounds. See a white flag on the monastery. And I've put very cynically, so we shell it to teach them a lesson. we didn't believe it. 167 Brigade has gained all its objectives and is pulled back off the hill to rest.
Presumably they must have been relieved before they...
Oh, sure, back, sure, sure. By the Guards Brigade.
Did you see them going up to...
No, I don't think they came up the same road, though I can't remember, to be quite frank. I can't remember. I mean, there must have been more than one. No, it's true, ours was the main track up that hill. Yes. There was a lot of movement to and fro, but anyway, 167 Brigade, which is quite a lot of men, what, 3,000 or 4,000 came off the hill.
And you were still in the same...
I was still in the same place.
Location. Mm-hmm.
And the next day I visited the grave of the unfortunate signaller Ruddy and pack up my tactical headquarters. It's a fine day, return feeling rotten and weary to the regiment, to RHQ, which is quite cosy, and volunteer for duty officer, presumably that meant simply sitting by the phones. 8th of December, establish a recreation room in the village. We're back in this village or a similar one to Orkey.
Hmm. What had happened to the command of the regiment? Did the 2IC automatically take control?
Yes, yes.
And did he remain in command, or was he replaced in due course?
Well, we shall find out, but he was, yes, he was replaced.
Hmm.
I can't remember exactly, I shall have the dates somewhere here, how long it took to replace him. But you see, this is December, and by the end of January we were getting ready to go to the Anzio Bridgehead, and by that time we had a new CO.
Mm.
It's an interesting point you raise. I think that possibly, though I don't know, if we were talking all the time about regular soldiers, the second-in-command might have been, given temporary promotion and allowed to stay. But I don't know whether the regulars regarded these territorial officers of ours as being the equivalent. I may be maligning them in suggesting there's any doubt about it. I don't know. But, our CO2, Churchill, this was the first of three occasions on which the colonel departed and he had to act up, but he was never confirmed as being a lieutenant colonel. He's never made one. He was always acting up as senior major. Whether it was something personal to do with, him, or whether it's to do with being territorial. I mean, he was a brave man. He had an MC and bar. Or whether it was to do with the need to entrench the interests of the regular army, I don't know.
It's an intriguing question.
It is. There's a bit of small things. I mean, there's no doubt that the regulars had just a slight edge on the territorials in all of these things. You felt that the war was the interlude in their career, so to speak. I didn't mean that to sound cynical, but there's some truth in it. I mean, they were tended to be graded up to acting ranks, then temporary ranks, and in the expectation from what military history tells us, that when the war finished, as it eventually would, they would be down to a more basic rank.
Indeed, substantive this, rank. Yes.
Substantive rank, and this did happen. Yes, well.
But I mean, presumably you must have made some arrangements, because, as I understand it, you would effectively have two command parties, one under the 2IC and one under the colonel.
Yes.
With the colonel gone and the 2IC in his stead.
We had to provide replacements for these chaps who were all wounded. I mean, there were a lot of them. The TAC HQ was effectively wiped out.
Yes.
And people had to be drafted in. I can't remember how we did this, but the adjutant and I obviously had to do some pretty quick thinking to...
Mm. I mean, did you have sufficient spare bodies in RHQ to cover those duties, or did you?
We wouldn't have any spares. We'd have to bring chaps in
from the batteries,
as volunteers or people nominated from the batteries, and then there would be general reinforcements coming through all the time to replace them in the batteries. But we couldn't do without Attack HQ.
Quite.
So it was more important to keep this, to establish this with some fairly bright recruitment. From the batteries, leaving vacancies there if necessary, which undoubtedly they would be. And I went to a battery commander's conference, and there must have been quite a lot to talk about after that battle, and apart from the loss of a commanding officer. And I put in... perhaps it was over-optimistic talk, but they decided to keep me at RHQ with a view to my being adjutant in time, is what I was told.
Well, by this time you'd been understudying as adjutant, hadn't you?
For about 2 months, I suppose.
Yes.
Yes, that's all. Very
and, I mean, do you think by that stage you'd learned the ropes of adjutanting and would have...
Well, they must have thought I had, and I'd seen... I'd worked, obviously, not if not... to give satisfaction, at least not to be sacked, with a quite demanding colonel. So they must have thought that at that time, of course, they didn't know what was going to happen to him. He's just wounded. I would stay there and in due course act up. I've noted the following day that the major went to Naples and the adjutant... took time off, you know, he took things easy, and I have the regiment almost to myself at 21. It's very amusing. Four officers arrive on attachment, so we were getting reinforcements dribbling through all the time.
So you I mean, this presumably is when you were back in rest, having taken your part in this.
That's right. You see, the brigade had been pulled out.
The whole brigade were pulled back.
And we, presumably, as the support for that brigade, were given a bit of a break, unless we were required for barrages and that sort of thing.
And had the guns done a lot of shooting during the fighting?
Yes. They were on, they were targeting this monastery and positions around it.
As I said,
it was one of the heaviest barrages.
Yes. And they were part of the big barrage rather than being on call to their normal battalions.
Oh, the barrage, the two were not in competition necessarily. I mean, the barrage would come first, generally speaking, and then you would be put under the command of your troop commander for firing orders in liaison with the infantry.
So barrage first.
The barrage first to lay the ground, so to speak.
And then support later.
And then support for the troops moving forward. Troops would sit tight whilst the barrage, unless it was a creeping barrage, in which case they move steadily forward, that would create problems in the terms you're describing, because you can't be both doing the barrage and the support.
No, quite. And the ground they're going over, what did Monte Camino look like if you were looking up from your post? I mean, was it cultivated at all? Was it?
Oh no, it was barren. It was like looking up the side of Mount Snowdon.
Yes.
I'll show you. I think I've got a photo or two of it here.
So it was a rocky mountain slope.
Yes, it was this stuff.
I see, yes. It looks as though it's dotted with trees, or some parts of it.
Yes, just the odd ones, yes, that's
right.
This
is 0.727, which you mentioned as a type.
Good.
That's 819 there. And those both look like spot heights, don't they? Because they're both on little knolls on there.
Yes, that's right.
On the slope.
That's right.
And would the track be running up this, what you've marked here as Bare Arse slope?
It's Bare Arse Ridge, yes.
Yes.
Well, it would be at the foot of it. I guess it's somewhere up here, this kind of thing.
It looks as though there's a village there, doesn't it?
Yes.
Roughly.
That could be Orkney that we were in.
Yes. So it looks as though this, it doesn't even look as though there were boulders or other outcrops strewn about, which could have provided a certain amount of cover for
No, there was not much cover there.
Yes.
But of course, when you start going up the steep slopes as infantry, you're not easily overlooked by something on top.
No,
of
you're
the
on
edge
dead
of the
ground,
slope.
Aren't you?
That's right,
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
So
until they got to where this swell ends here, judging by the shading, they would be covered by the ground. But once they were over the lip of that, that's the military crest there, roughly, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
That left-hand side
again,
of Bare Arse Ridge. They then have open ground, which would be rocky, to traverse before getting to the location of the enemy.
Yes, I think that's the same thing from a different name. There's the monastery.
Yes.
That's probably the same piece of ground on a smaller scale.
Must be. That gives a similar impression that that Scots Guards Ridge, so that's presumably, yes, I mean, it looks as though there isn't really very much, although it is very open. That
there's not much cover, no.
There's no terracing, is there, on the approach?
No.
And terracing, presumably, would give you reasonable cover if you were, yes. So in that case, you would really be pretty strongly dependent upon the quality of your artillery support to get you onto the objective.
Yes, keep their heads down.
Yes.
Yes.
And what about the German artillery? Presumably, they were they suppressed as well during the infantry attack, or were they able to try and break it up?
I think it would be very difficult for them to have. It would be a howitzer job, essentially, wouldn't it? Land stuff on the near side, our near side of that slope. I don't think artillery was really a problem. I think sort of enfilade machine gun fire was probably
and
the
mortar, presumably.
And mortar, yes. That's right.
I mean, did the...
I was not, you see, in my little hideaway, I was not shelled. It was mortars. They're the only things that could do.
Could actually drop down into your... I mean, did the infantry discuss the enemy artillery with you after this
attack? I can't remember.
Do you remember them saying anything about it?
No, I can't remember at all. I don't think the enemy artillery were particularly active. This was an infantry battle once the barraging had stopped. It was a very difficult infantry situation.
So the thing that Germans were renowned for using in the ridges in Tunisia was a combination of the mortar, the light machine gun, which you mentioned, and the 88, which could fire effectively a flat trajectory from one ridge to another.
Don't I know it, yeah.
Ah. So you met those later on, but not at Monte Camino.
Not at Monte Camino, no. It was a few weeks later I was aimed at by an 88. No, I think this was not 88 millimetre territory, really.
Yes.
I doubt whether they could get the jolly things up this mountain, you see. Them.
I was going to ask you where your own gun positions were for this battle.
Well, they were on the near side of the... Of the valley.
Of the Orkney village.
They were not in any of that territory, really.
So you were firing over the valley
from
forward slope to forward slope.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the range would be... must have been getting fairly...
4,000 yards, something like that, 3 or 4 miles. But, I mean, it's well within the capacity of the 25-pounders, which also, incidentally, have huge...
well, they can fire virtually like a howitzer,
they can fire
as
howitzers, yes. Very flexible gun. Yes, well, there we are. We were getting... we got to that battle at last, and this was tackling Hitler's winter line.
And no snow as yet.
No snow, no.
And that might have made a difference, mightn't it, if you'd had a snowfall before?
I think, although we captured this... yes, I think that's right. I mean, it prevented that battle altogether. It just made it impossible. As it is, I think it ground to a halt, because... although we took that monastery thing, not far beyond it comes Cassino, and that was not taken for another 5 months. Mm. And I notice, you see, that within 2 days, we were sending out a reconnaissance to look for new positions near the sea. And we were pulled right out of this mountain range altogether and down onto this stuff.
Well, looking at this ground here, I mean, would it have been possible for you to get your guns up onto Bear Ass Ridge or one like it and
not
actually... No.
I don't think so.
So there's the question of access, isn't there?
Absolutely, sure. I mean, the quads would not have been able to get there.
Yeah.
We couldn't have got them there.
So you had 2 days of rest in your village, presumably doing a bit of recuperating after battle of Monte Camino, and then you had orders to move.
And then we had to send the 11th of December, we were send a reconnaissance out to new positions in the area of where 46th Division are, at a place called Sessa Arunca, which I well remember, near the coast.
Did you go on that recce party?
No, I didn't. And I've noted here that Monte Camino is silent now. I think it had ground to a halt.
Presumably.
They declared a draw, more or less.
Had the monastery been taken?
Yes.
Yeah, so, Camino, could probably regard it as a sort of outpost for the...
Yes.
Position at
that's
Casino,
right.
And
that's right.
It had been taken at presumably at some cost.
That's right.
And the Germans were withdrawn back to their main line of resistance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that, in effect, it was the sort of de facto winter line.
Yeah, so you cleared the approaches to Casino.
That's right. And it seems that our 56th Division is swapping sectors with 46th Division, which was the Midlands Sherwood Foresters lot, with us going down to the lowlands. And that was that. So off we went, have a moonlight drive to form a new TAC HQ down on in the valley near the coast in a village called Rongolese.
I mean, did you find that an attractive prospect going back? Towards the coast, or?
I think on the whole, yes. You feel a bit restricted in these hamlets because the access is so difficult. Down on the plains, it's always easier to move around. Mm. You get a feeling of greater freedom, particularly if you're a Lincolnshire coastal dweller like me.
I was perhaps I should ask you if being in such an unfamiliar landscape did impose an additional degree of stress upon you as a flatlander. Some soldiers have said that being in an unfamiliar landscape does rather...
Yes, I think there's a fair point there. I hadn't thought of it at all. But certainly it was unfamiliar. But at that age, I think I found it, exciting, stimulating more than anything. It's the sort of countryside I associated with holiday-making, the Pennines, rather than anything else. It's more exciting, but the lowland was more comfortable to contemplate, for me at any rate.
So you're saying you had a moonlit drive out of...
A moonlight ride to form a new tactical headquarters, TAC HQ, in a village called Rongolese. Eventually, squalid, no billets, and eventually dossed down, grateful for any sort of shelter. The next day, I set up an office, and eventually the whole regiment comes along. We find slightly better quarters when some infantry move out. We may be here for some time. Hard work getting everything settled in. Now have a new service.